In his 1981 bestseller, Getting to Yes, Roger Fisher suggested that conflicts should not be looked at as a win or lose proposition. Instead, the two parties involved should look for mutual gains whenever possible. Fisher developed his techniques for conflict resolution as a negotiator and law professor with the Harvard Negotiation Project. Fisher has taken the principles for negotiation he set down in Getting to Yes and applied them to personal relationships in his new book, Getting Together. Let's review his strategy. He says you should have yes as a goal rather than winning.
Winning has a notion of losing, and I don't use the word win. People want to win-win. I say fine if that's the way you like to think about it. But when someone says, I want to win, I ask them, oh, who's winning your marriage? Who's winning at the office? If that's a good question, then the marriages in the office both have a serious problem.
Now, another principle that you've applied both to formal negotiations and to relationships is to separate the people from the problem. Explain.
Yes, I get questions all the time. What do you do if the people are the problem? What I mean is that no matter how seriously you and I differ, no matter how seriously I disagree with you, if it's worthwhile settling that problem, I want to deal with you. And the difficulty is that many people try to use the relationship to extort a concession. I won't talk to you again unless you do X, Y, and Z. Or they try to buy a relationship by making a concession. They'll say, all right, for the sake of the relationship, I'll give in. And giving in doesn't help a relationship. It's like Neville Chamberlain appeasement. If you have a poor relationship, if you and I have a poor relationship and I give in, then you say, ah, I know how to get Roger to give in. I will demand it next time. So that appeasement doesn't work. You can't buy a relationship. You have to build it.
An interesting point that you make in your new book about relationships is that preventing disagreements should not be a goal, that there's nothing wrong with disagreements. It was interesting for me to read that, since I think I'm probably one of many people who try to prevent disagreements, thinking that...
Well, I'm worried when you say that, because we were taught as children, probably you and I, that it's naughty to quarrel, you shouldn't disagree. And so if we approaching an
area... To me,
area,
disagreement is a sign that things are starting to fall apart, right?
That this, we shouldn't, it's rude to disagree. Mm-hmm. And if you're at dinner and someone starts saying, I'm going to support Dukakis, and someone says, shh, they're supporting Bush, we must not discuss it because that'll be unpleasant. We have a lot to learn, because if we have an ongoing relationship, personal or business, and there are issues coming up, if we sweep them under the rug, they will fester and they'll come up later. I'll kitchen sink you. I'll say, hey, how about this and this and this and this and what about that? But if we deal with them, we say, you know, let's get side by side and look at that problem. And it's not, you're not the problem. I don't point my finger at you and say, you're the problem. I say, you and I, Terry, have a problem over here we're dealing with.
Did you ever go in with the let's win attitude?
Oh, I'm sure at times I get angry. At times there are some people I want to push around and I do it.
I'm interested in a mistake that you made when you realize I've got to do something differently. This doesn't work.
It's the degree to which I practice when I read the paper, newspaper. I always try and put myself in the other side's shoes. I say, how would it have to be for me to make that speech? Mm-hmm. If I were going to say what P.W. Botha is saying in South Africa, what would I have to think? How would the world have to look to me? Because it seems so odd from my vantage point. So the practice of reversing my role and saying on that side, and I used it when I was before I came to Harvard, when I spent a couple of years arguing cases in the Supreme Court, I would try to understand the other side's case. I remember opening an argument to the Supreme Court saying, may it please the court, you've heard petitioner. Petitioner has a strong case. In fact, I think it's stronger than he made it. I would put his case like this. 1, 2, 3, 4. And Justice Frankfurter said, Mr. Fisher, you're here for the government, you know. And I said, yes, the government has a strong case too, like this. And the same way today, I tell my students and the lawyers I train, the business people, I say, you're not ready to negotiate until you can put the other side's case better than they can and have an answer to it.
When someone calls you in as a negotiator, whether it's a labor management dispute, a diplomatic dispute, a war.
A business dispute.
A business dispute. What are your ground rules before you'll accept?
If both sides hire me as a mediator, I want confidentiality agreement. I want them both that neither one can fire me unless I talk to both that time. And I've been fired some of my most successful cases. Outraged clients have tried to fire me two or three times, you know, and I'll say, fine, when can we schedule a meeting to talk about it? And by the tomorrow, they've cooled off and we go on. So that is one. Another one is agree to listen, that they will let me talk with them. I'll have access to somebody with the power to decide. If the chairman hires me, I want to have access to the chairman's office. I want to be able to get up there, bypass the junior vice president who says that's our position. If I'm hired by an embassy, I want to talk with the foreign minister. I want to be able to advise them on the top. And in Central America, I want to be able to talk with the very top, with the presidents, if that became relevant. My first job, though, is to make sure I understand their concerns and that they know I understand their concerns.
Now, have you ever had to work with somebody who was obviously into the let's win philosophy and tried to talk them into a kind of what's our common ground here philosophy? How do you talk somebody into that? if they have this win attitude,
I say you want to look, let's see, you have an interest in looking like a winner. You want to tell your family about it. You want to write home. Let's see what the impression is. And take a labor union situation. Some union leaders want to win, win, win.
Mm-hmm.
I say, you mean you want to look tough? What do you mean win? Mm-hmm. You want to look tough? And one case some years ago, there was about to go on strike, and I was helping the company. And this guy was tough, tough, tough. And I went down to him and I said, look, you've called a strike for tomorrow night deadline, and your terms are on the table. If you will go on the union steps tonight and say, here's your last ultimatum, and if you will announce these terms, these new terms, and you will say, this is our final ultimatum, the president must come to union headquarters and sign it to avoid a strike. If these are the terms you pronounce, the president will come and sign them. You look good, but you give us the company a lot of substance. So his interest in winning was to look like a winner. And he cared more about the union terms being accepted than what those terms were. So I can design a solution like that.
So you respect face-saving in a situation
like
that? Yes,
of course. He wants to save. He wanted to get reelected. And once he was reelected, there was somebody we could deal with. We could talk to each other.
Have you been in a negotiation where you felt utterly frustrated and you felt that there just it was going to be impossible to work out a mutually agreeable solution?
Basically, the way when you're locked in and getting nowhere, I look and say, what element are they focusing on? They're focusing on my position. I won't change. I bring one more element into the picture so it's no longer the only thing on the table. Someone said, "The house. I demand $200,000 for that house." I said, I think the house is worth about $147,000. He said, well, $200,000. I said, where'd that figure come from? He says, what I want. I said, don't you want $2 million? He says, not worth $2 million. I say, now we're talking about its worth. I agree with you. Now, if you can show me, what evidence do you have it's worth $200,000? Here's my evidence of what the neighboring sales are. So if he's taking a fixed position, I bring in the external standards of fairness.
When it comes time for you to negotiate salary at Harvard or to negotiate an advance with a publisher, do you put all your principles into effect?
Oh, absolutely. I go to Houghton Mifflin and I say, Houghton Mifflin, all I want is a fair royalty rate on this. And to fair for me is I'm getting no less than anybody else you ever gave a royalty to in a comparable situation. What's comparable, I'll negotiate. But I want it. And same in the office. My young colleagues come in, and I say, I'm offering you so much. And they say, what's the criteria, Roger? What's the standard? And we'll have to have external benchmarks of fairness, more than so-and-so, less than so-and-so, based on experience, training, whatever it may be. No, it's very helpful. And the great thing it does, you can't get everything you want. There's no way. Both people want the corner office. There's only one corner office. You can't both get it. What it gives people is confidence. They know how to prepare. And they also know how to negotiate without being rigid, how to be open to learning something in the process, and how to feel good about it.
Roger Fisher is the author of Getting to Yes and the new book, Getting Together. This is Fresh Air.